This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Lots of sun on this October Saturday, the first Saturday in October. Good morning, I'm Scott Jagow, along with Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve.
Each year, the great pumpkin rises out of the pumpkin patch that he thinks is the most sincere. He's got to pick this one. He's got to. I don't see how a pumpkin patch can be more sincere than this one. You can look all around and there's not a sign of hypocrisy. Nothing but sincerity as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, it's that time of year. You got to have the great pumpkin patch. Sincerity, not hypocrisy. Sincerity in your pumpkin patch. God, it's an important thing. Do you guys at the Shaw Nature Reserve, Aaron, do like a Halloween event or a fall event to celebrate?
Yes and no. So we have some of our programming is focused on the fall or is focused on Halloween. So, for example, we offer native plant school classes, and our last native plant school class involved walking with a horticulturalist around the Whitmer Wildflower Garden and just observing fall in the garden. We also have another one coming up in about 2 weeks that is about native plants and their wicked side. So looking at some of the poisonous properties of some native plants. So that's kind of like our Halloween edition. There are other hikes that are themed along the Halloween. And then for the staff, we always have some sort of fall event, kind of a gathering of all of the Shaw Nature Reserve staff to celebrate Halloween. And, of course, we are encouraged to dress up in costumes.
Of course. Do you have a costume this year?
I haven't picked one out yet, even though I absolutely love dressing up for Halloween.
Do you?
Oh, yes, yes. If I could go to a Halloween party every day of October, I would totally do it.
Well, tell me about some of your previous costumes or one of them.
So one of my favorite costumes was I dressed up as a marionette clown.
Okay.
So I had like a tutu and striped. I was kind of the adult version or maybe the Nightmare Before Christmas version of a marionette clown.
Yeah.
So that was one of my favorites. I've dressed up as zombies. Usually it's some sort of a scary theme.
Yeah, it's funny how some people really get into dressing up and then other people just are, ugh. I used to be one of those people who really got into Halloween costumes, but I don't know. Maybe I have to get back into it.
I give it a go.
You got me thinking about it. Yeah. All right. The point of this show is to answer your questions. 314-436-7900 is the number to call. Sally, you're up next on the Garden Hotline. Morning, Sally.
Hey, good morning. I have a tree and soil question. I have a bed. It's about 70 feet wide and probably 30 feet deep that's filled with Vinca minor and three mature oak trees. The only one of the oak trees is showing some declining, I guess I should say, around the base of the tree. Now, this tree does not sit in water, and it is at the bottom of what I would call a slight incline, but, you know, it does not get an excess amount of water. My question is, excuse me, at the very base of the tree is rotting out. There are actually spaces or, you know, areas where you can see that part of the tree looks like it's dying. The upper part, the tree itself, looks very healthy and has for a long time. But the base of the tree is looking like it's dying. Mushrooms are growing on it. And in addition, the area around that tree will not support the vinca. A number of years ago, the vinca died out, and I thought it was just a bad winter, and so I have replanted it several times, two or three times. I've had the soil tested. It always comes back high in phosphorus, high in potassium, and the recommendation was to lime it. So I did. But everything I planted in there was about $100 worth of vinca plants, individual plants. None of them survived. So what do you think is going on there? Because it's only around this one tree that's showing some damage at the bottom, at the base of the tree.
So if I can ask, the oak tree that's showing the decline at the base, are you seeing, you said there's mushrooms growing, but are you seeing fissures and any kind of moisture or liquid that's oozing out at the base?
I haven't noticed that, no.
Okay. So sometimes that can happen if there's a fungal infection, but there are other things that could be going on. If you have, if there's nothing that's growing around the base of the tree, if you're seeing decline at the base of the tree, and if you've not called an arborist out, I would highly suggest...
I actually have spoken to two or three arborists.
Okay.
And all of them have said, I've never seen anything like this.
One
arborist took photographs to ask somebody back at the office, and they never got back to me.
Oh, bummer. Okay. So, because honestly, I've not heard of this before either. So this is usually when you have decline at the base of a tree, you have some sort of serious fungal infection, especially if you're seeing certain types of mushrooms. One thing you could do, too, is take some photos and send it, or you can also... I'm not sure if you can take the mushrooms, but there are two places that you could inquire about your issue. One is to contact the Missouri Botanical Garden Kemper Center, their hotline. You can do that via the phone or email. And if you send them a photo, a lot of times they can troubleshoot and they can figure out what's going on. The other thing
can you give me the name of that? Again, Missouri Botanical Garden, what?
It's their, it's basically their garden hotline or their, let me find for you the contact information. And while I do that, there's one other resource that I'll point you towards, and that is that the University of Missouri Extension Office has a plant health lab where they can diagnose any kind, some like infections. So as far as, since it's a tree, I'm not sure how to get them a sample. A lot of times you'll like take a leaf and you'll send it to them. But let me get you that contact information. The Kemper Center is, let me see here.
Is this the Missouri Botanical Garden
mm-hmm.
that you're giving me?
Yes, that is correct. And they actually have a plant doctor.
Okay.
And I'm just looking for the contact information. Okay, so plantinformation@mobot.org.
And is that all spelled out, information?
Correct, yes.
Plantinformation@
M-O-B as in boy, O-T as in Tom, .org.
Okay.
And then their phone number is 314-577-5143.
And just as a side note, I have treated the base of this tree a number of times with a fungicide because I saw the mushrooms growing at the base of the tree. And I thought, well, you know, I don't know what's going on, but that's a fungus, so I'm going to treat it with a fungicide. And that just hasn't worked either.
Okay. Well, yeah, there's different kinds of fungus. So sometimes when you see mushrooms growing on a tree, it doesn't necessarily mean that the tree is going to die. But there are certain types of mushrooms that they are an indicator that the tree is going to be in decline. So IDing those different mushrooms is going to be kind of pretty key to determining what's going on with that tree. But I'm not an arborist, and so my knowledge on what's going on is very limited. And so I would suggest reaching out to the plant doctor and the people at the Kemper Center at the Missouri Botanical Garden, as well as the Missouri University of Missouri Extension, their plant lab.
Okay, I will do that.
All right. Thanks, Sally. We appreciate the question this morning.
Thank you.
Sounds like a gardening mystery that we need to solve.
Yes.
Erin Goss is here. She's from the Shaw Nature Reserve, taking your questions at 314-436-7900. Jan, we'll get to your question next. Stay tuned. Got a short break. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Our guest this morning is Erin Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve, taking your questions at 314-436-7900. Up next, Jan, you are on the Garden Hotline.
Well, thank you guys for taking my call. And Erin, my wife and I, who listen devotedly to the Garden Hotline, think you've been wonderful in the shows that we've heard you. So we appreciate your taking your time to do it. My problem is one that's gone on for a little while. It's probably gotten worse now because I thought it would go away, but it hasn't. I would say that about half of our backyard now has been taken over by Creeping Charlie. Mm. Yeah, right. That's the way I feel about it. So is this a long-term solution, or do I just go out there now and get it with some broadleaf weed killer? So what should I do?
Yes, so I imagine a lot of callers out there can identify. I can identify because I have lots of Creeping Charlie in my backyard, and it is really hard to get rid of, as you're finding out. So there's two approaches, I would say, with Creeping Charlie. The first is after it rains and the soil's a little looser, you can go out there and start pulling. Yeah. So it does not have very deep root system, and it's really easy to yank, and sometimes that can feel pretty good to be, like, removing it manually that way. But you can also use a broadleaf herbicide. Just, you know, make sure to follow the rules on the back, the guidance on the back of the bottle, and don't ever spray on a windy day. And just watch, you know, the plants around it. Sometimes there's a little bit of drift that happens with when you're spraying. So if you are concerned, if you have sensitive plants around that Creeping Charlie that you want to save, there are cones that you can buy. There's like little protectors that you can buy that limit the width of the spray. And you can also, or you can also use like a cardboard box, not a box, but like a piece of cardboard. Sometimes if I've got something that I want to make sure to protect, I will put a barrier between the plant that I'm spraying and then the plant that I want to protect. So either approach should work.
Well, Erin, that's very good advice. And over the years, I've tried to do that. The pulling it out by the roots, I do that around the flower beds, and it comes out very easily after a rain. You're absolutely right. And now the only last question I have is that we have three dogs, and they love the backyard. So if I do the broadleaf weed killer, then how long do we need to keep them out of the yard how it wouldn't affect them?
Yeah, that's a really important part of that process. So it depends on what herbicide you go with. And it should tell you on the back of the bottle the amount of time that either a human or animals should be keep out of that area. In general, if you're using something like glyphosate, that dries fairly quickly as long as it's not a dewy morning. That dries fairly quickly, and so a lot of times within a few hours, people can be out and about and around those plants. The only thing I'd be concerned about is if your dog has a tendency to eat plants, and if you notice that they're eating plants in that area, that could definitely have a longer term effect. But again, I would look at the back of the bottle. That bottle, that label should tell you the amount of time. If you're using something like glyphosate or Roundup, I would wait a few hours and then it should be safe. but definitely check the back of that bottle just to be sure.
Since one of our dogs is actually trying to eat morning glories, and I think, yeah, right, I think morning glory is poisonous, so I'm doing my best to see that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it can be poisonous, that's true.
All right, Jan, thanks for calling in and asking your question of Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. Let's go next to Phyllis. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm considering planting a row of columnar hornbeam along a driveway because I want that very symmetrical, regular form and the color and that formality. But when I drive around town, I see a lot of dieback, which, of course, would ruin the whole purpose. And I know there's a European variety and an American variety. I'm assuming that most often sold is the European. If I get one of the American columnar, do I lessen the risk of that dieback, or is that just typical to that species?
So you're absolutely right that most of the hornbeams that you find in the landscape, especially if they're cultivars and columnar, are going to be the European hornbeam. There, it is possible that there are some native columnar hornbeams. I'm not familiar with those. But in general, choosing a native species is going to result in a tougher plant, as long as you put it in the right place. So one of the things I would suggest is if you do plant a hornbeam, is make sure that those trees are getting enough water, especially in the very beginning. Once that plant establishes, it should be fairly drought tolerant, but especially whenever we are having a period of time when there's not as much rain, give it a bit of water, because those hornbeams, typically you find them growing around creeks and in lower lying areas. So they do appreciate a little bit more moisture.
So you think the dieback is more typical to water problems than our winters?
I have a feeling it is more related to those water problems. Now, there's no guarantee that dieback can occur on any tree or plant. But again, I have a feeling that a lot of times that dieback is more due to lack of water.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right. Thank you for the question, Phyllis. Thanks for the answer there, Aaron. Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve is taking your questions. The number to call in, we have a few calls to get to right after a break. It's 314-436-7900. Stay tuned to the Garden Hotline on Camo X.
Dusty old farmer out working your field, hanging down over your tractor wheel.
Thanks for tuning in to the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow, happy to be joined this morning by Aaron Goss, who's making a return to the program from the Shaw Nature Reserve. She's taking your questions at 314-436-7900. Up next is David. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, I would like to plant a blue spruce in my yard. I would like to know exactly what I should do in terms of preparing the hole. Also, I don't want a blue spruce that's going to be 30 feet tall eventually. Do they make them where they only go up to 7 or 8 feet? Or if not a blue spruce, something very similar that looks like a Christmas tree.
Yeah, so there definitely are blue spruces out there that you can purchase that would be on the smaller scale. When you're shopping and you're at one of the nurseries, I would ask one of the people who were working and see what they have in stock, and then look at the tag and verify the size. I can't tell you one off the top of my head, but I do know that they make them that there are cultivars out there that are much smaller. As far as preparing the ground, the best thing to do is whatever size of spruce that you purchase. So if you buy it in a container, or if it's a, what's called a ball and burlap, which is a larger, going to be a much, much larger plant, you want to make sure that the whole size is about twice the width of the container or the size of the ball and burlap. That 2 foot in excess of that container size gives plenty of room for it, for the tree to put on lateral new root growth, and then also to manipulate the container in the ground itself. So dig your hole, like I said, about 2 feet in excess of the container size, and then take it out of the container. I usually run my hands along the root ball or the roots after you pull the tree out of the container, kind of mess with the roots a little bit. I use my fingers and I kind of scrum them up a little bit. Sometimes I'll use a soil knife and cut shallow cuts, make shallow cuts into the root system, and that will stimulate root growth. And then you put the tree in the hole and backfill the hole about halfway, and then make sure that the soil is pretty firmly in place, not like super firm where you can't manipulate the soil at all, but just kind of a little bit firm, and then you can continue filling the hole. And then make sure to water the tree really well after you plant and put a little mulch around it, and it should be good to go.
Pardon me, is there anything fertilizer-wise to put in that hole, or just dig the dirt out and put the ball in and put it back in?
You know, I don't usually add fertilizer directly to the hole. However, because some of our evergreens do struggle with iron uptake and they can kind of their needles can yellow, I do usually add a fertilizer twice a year. I use an organic fertilizer that you can apply twice a year, once in the spring, once in the fall. And that can help condition the soil so that the spruce can take up that iron out of the soil that it needs in order to be healthy.
Should that root ball or be above the level of the ground? It seems to me I heard Mike Miller say that it should be like, quarter of above the...
Yes, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. That is actually a really important part that I missed. So when you're looking at the tree, there is, at the very base of it, there's something called a root flare or a trunk flare. And it's kind of where the trunk meets the roots itself. And a lot of times you get just a little bit of fluting, a little bit where the trunk kind of... It gradually moves, kind of gets a little bit bigger. Right around that area is where you want it to be above the soil line. Not too terribly much, but just enough so that it sits above that soil line. So I usually will use a tool, or I'll use my arm, depending on the size of the hole, put that tool or arm flat level against on top of the hole, and then you drop the tree in the hole, and then you can then kind of determine how high that root flare sits above, or that root flare sits above the hole opening, and then you can adjust the hole size from there. But yes, you definitely want that root flare to sit a little bit above the soil level.
Very good. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for the question, David. Up next on the Garden Hotline is Steve. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Aaron. I appreciate you taking the call. Hey, I had a quick question for you on possible controls of Canadian goldenrod in a larger prairie planting of 4 to 5 acres. The planting is about 4+ years old, and the Canadian goldenrod is just having its way. So I didn't know the best way to deal with that, if any. Possibly cutting it a couple times a year, possibly. Any ideas would be appreciated?
Yeah, so that Canadian goldenrod is, you know it. It's aggressive. And
yeah.
Part of the issue is that it sets a lot of seed, and it reproduces by rhizome, so it spreads underground, as
right.
You know. So couple approaches you can take is you can use a foliar herbicide and just do spot treatments. You can also go, I mean, if you've got how many acres you said, like 3 or 4 acres, that's a lot.
About 4 to 5 acres.
4 to 5 uh-huh. acres. That's a lot. If you were to manually pull it, that's a lot of pulling.
Yeah.
That is another thing, another way to go about it. You know, some people will do a combination, and so they will go out and cut the flowering tops back after they've, you know, kind of when they're on the more mature side of the bloom, but before it sets seed, you can cut those tops back and then spray it so it doesn't spread by seed. You can also okay. mow it, but again, because it spreads by underground, it's going to probably continue to spread underground. Are you located outside of the city of St. Louis, I assume?
Yeah, I'm actually over on the Illinois side across the Illinois. St. Louis.
Okay. So I'm not as familiar with Illinois, but a lot of times you can call like a private conservation officer with the Department of Conservation. Or over in Illinois, it may have a different name, but they can sometimes give you guidance, especially if you have several acres that you're dealing with and you're dealing with something like that Canada goldenrod.
Okay. Frustrating. I mean, everything's looking really well, except for that's just kind of taking a foothold, and I was trying to figure out how to deal with it the best way.
Yeah,
but I appreciate your help.
Again, if you can get out there and clip those seed heads before they go to seed, and then do some spot spraying, maybe start on a small section and see how it works. But that might be a good approach.
Is now a good time to cut it? I probably should have cut it before, but is now a good time to cut it, like today or so, if I start cutting it at this point?
Yeah, I think the timing is really about how far advanced it is in its blooming stage. So if
right.
you're seeing those flowers start to set seed, definitely go out there and cut it.
Okay.
You should be able to go out and cut it, no problem. Around this time, but say it was in August, then I would probably advise to wait until it's actually blooming, because you don't want it necessarily to rebloom, right? We want to get it at the later end of its blooming cycle so that it doesn't have a chance to rebloom.
That makes sense. Aaron, I appreciate your help.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling.
All right, Gloria, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, I'm calling you about a bare spot. I had this bare spot. Last year I had them. Some of them got better. And I got one big round one, you know, and I keep working with it. And I have my seeds every year with allergy service. And that bare spot just won't go nowhere. I put seeds in it and seeds in it. I keep it watered every day for 15, 20 minutes, you know, and I'm just trying to find out what can I do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Are the bare spots in your turf?
No, in my grass, I'm sorry.
In your grass? Okay.
It's just big, it's a big round bare spot. That bare spot will come up, beat grass, and then the next thing it's gone. I treated it and everything else. Mm-hmm. Compost in it, like the lady said, you know, and I had allergy service seasons again for me this year to see if I can get this grass going, or do I need to get it all dig up and put fresh grass down.
Yeah, that sounds very frustrating. Have you ever had your soil tested?
Have I ever had it what?
Have you had your soil tested?
No.
To see what's... Okay, so if you've already, if you've overseeded and you've treated the spots, see if you can get a soil test done. And that soil test, you can perform it yourself, and the instructions are on the Missouri Extension website for their soil testing service. There's very clear instructions. I would try getting your soil tested and see if there's anything going on with your soil. Because that's if you've, like I said, if you've overseeded and you're treating it and you're irrigating those spots, that's exactly what I would have suggested. So
I don't put that. I put good dirt down. I put compost, organic down. You know, I put good dirt in spot in other spots too.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you're supposed to do. Sometimes what happens is the soil that's down really, really deep. So, you know, past 2 feet or maybe a foot and a half, sometimes there's something going on down in below what we below the levels that we normally dig into. And that can work its way up to the surface over time. So I'm just wondering if maybe there's not some kind of imbalance with the nutrients. Again, with the spotting, usually in grass, that's usually an indication of a fungal infection. So again, if you've been treating it, I am not 100% sure about that. I encouraged one of the other callers to reach out to the plant doctor service at the Missouri Botanical Garden. You can take a photo and share that photo with them, and having some sort of visual someone may be able to troubleshoot with you a little bit better than just a description. So I would reach out to the Missouri Botanical Garden plant doctor and see if
it's coming up a little, you know, since I. Allergies are done, then I put a little more seeds down to keep the birds strong. So it's coming up a little bit, but very little.
One other thing you might try, if you are only irrigating for 10 or 15 minutes a day, is irrigate for longer but less frequently throughout the week. So irrigate for an hour, you know, water that area for about an hour. I know that sounds like a lot of water, but only do it maybe two or three times a week. Because plants do adjust to a watering cycle.
All right. It sounds like a tough problem, but we've got a couple of options there for getting some information, soil tests, and sending some photos to the plant doctor at the Botanical Garden. Gloria, thank you for calling in to the Garden Hotline, which is 314-436-7900. And it's the last chance segment coming up next to ask your question of Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Aaron Goss is here from the Shaw Nature Reserve, which is a really cool place if you haven't visited. And in the fall, I imagine, I actually don't think I've been there in the fall. Now I'm going to have to make it a trip because I want to know what it looks like in the fall. Tell me about it.
Yeah, please do come visit us. In the fall, of course, we have the tree leaves that are changing. We have some of plants that are blooming, and we also have a bunch of fruit trees. And so, for example, the persimmons, they are ripening. They are turning a very vibrant orange. We have pawpaws that are ripening on the branches. And so you can also see some of the abundance that Missouri trees and plants have to offer. It's a beautiful place. And then, of course, if it's cooler, then you don't have to worry about that humidity while you're hiking on the trails.
Well, today it is a little hot, 91 degrees this afternoon, but it's going to cool off. Tomorrow only 81 and then 72 on Monday. What are the hours that the Shaw Nature Reserve operates? So if I wanted to go, I usually have days off during the week. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So our hours do change. They're seasonal. So currently, I think in October, we just moved to more of our fall hours. So we're open 8 a.m. until 7 p.m. And then at the end of October, we will go to our winter hours where we close at 5 p.m.
Okay. And still opening at 8?
Still opening at 8, yep.
Okay. Do you have something coming up, an event that might be fall related?
We sure do. Now this is not a Shaw Nature Reserve event. They're not hosting it. However, the Missouri Department of Conservation is hosting a fall frolic, and that's at the Roman Pavilion at Tower Grove Park. It's on a Sunday, October 20th. It's from 1 to 5 p.m. It is a family event, and it is celebrating all things fall. So we'll have information about trees and tree drop or leaf drop. So if you're if you want to know why the leaves are dropping and when they're going to be dropping, that's a great place to bring your kids and find out that information. And I believe there'll also be sometimes the conservation department will bring out their collection of pelts and skulls, which is always fun to be able to touch and pick up and feel and look at the fur that some of our fur bearers around Missouri have. And then also some of the skulls and skeletons of like turtles and coyotes, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that weekend should be close to or right around peak for the foliage, I would think. And in Tower Grove Park, it is so beautiful. One of the things I love about that place is that if you look at the trees, some of them don't look like they belong in the Midwest. And I believe that Henry Shaw brought seeds from California to plant trees in Tower Grove Park. And I can notice that because I used to live in California, and I notice that the trees look a little bit different than most of the trees around here. And I think that's why. And some of them are so old and huge and beautiful. Just the little groves, little pockets within Tower Grove Park. I just love it there.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. Again, St. Louis is really blessed with our parks and natural areas. And, you know, you look at a place like Tower Grove or Forest Park, or like Bell Fountain, the cemetery, they are all arboretums. And if they're not technically an arboretum, they're pretty darn close to being one. And so you can go and see trees from all over the world. You know, it's not just the trees that grow in Missouri, but trees that grow also in California.
We're also blessed to have a change of seasons four times a year here in the Midwest. And that's not the case in a lot of places. I mean, California is one example, like Southern California. Yeah. All the trees are palm trees. They look the same all year round. So we are blessed to have that. I love the changing of the seasons. All right, Aaron, thanks for coming back on the program. You're always welcome. You do a great job, and people enjoy listening to you. So thanks again.
Well, thanks for having me.
Aaron Goss from the Shaw Nature Reserve. Please visit. I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in to the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.